Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Game Day podcasts from TalkSport. Subscribe on Acast, iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Game Day, the appendix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day Record Book Appendix podcast, i.e. the little brother, little sister of the main weekend podcast, but often containing the actual gems of the stuff that's happened on the margins, on the edges, on the lip of the volcano that is world football. I'm with Danny Kelly, alongside me again, as it was at the weekend, Paul Parker, former England centre-half. I never quite work out, of your ex-clubs, QPR, Fulham, Manchester United, you all play with great distinction. Which one would you say you actually support these days, Paul?
I have to say Queen's Park Rangers.
You're a hoop, are you?
Yeah.
No, lovely, good. And Tom Rennie's with him as well, opinion machine gun and supporter of West Ham.
I don't care for Queen's Park Rangers.
Don't you?
Just because Paul has now said it, I now hate them. That's how it is.
Because they were a threat to West Ham.
You have to. We're
nothing
trying
to
both
hate about QPR.
We're trying both to be king of the ball. So you gotta defend your own position. You know.
All right. Listen,
your head does look
fantastic. We have got one. We've only got about 15 minutes. We've got about a million things to get through. Let's start with sex.
Yes.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
That's how you get the people in. I love this story from this week. Antonio Conte, of course, once Chelsea manager, these days at Inter Milan, says this. During the season, sex must not last long and players should always stay under their partners. Antonio Conte, currently the Inter Milan manager, has said in L'Equipe this week that the only way to stay fresh for games is to make sure that carnal relations with Mrs. Whomever last under 60 seconds.
Oh, God.
And the players have been asked about it this week, because he, of course, did the interview in L'Equipe, and it goes back to Italy, and they say, so what's happened? And I can tell you that Inter Milan striker Lautaro Martinez has said, yes, we do listen to what the manager has to say. We continue to work hard in training, and when we're at home, we like to rest, just like he says.
Well, interesting, isn't it, that Icardi and Wanda, his wife and manager, have got out of Inter Milan just in time then, haven't they? Because they give the distinct impression they spend most of their time on the kitchen table at it.
This story...
What, cooking?
Not cooking, no.
I've never understood this. I've never understood why coaches, managers, trainers
all
in all
they
the sports...
They all say it, don't they?
They're always obsessed with don't have sex before a big fight. Who is it that doesn't have sex? Muhammad Ali didn't have sex 6 weeks before any fight that he had, so he said.
Boxers, all, it became a big thing with boxers.
But is it true? I would have thought it's the exact opposite. Yeah. I would have thought it would have dropped the testosterone levels to such a degree that when you get out there, you can't perform.
I'm glad you said, when you use that word dropped, I got a little bit worried there.
You can't perform on the kitchen table, can you? With Wanda or otherwise.
Unfortunately, as the only ex-professional athlete in the room, unless I don't know something about you, Tom, it falls to you. Were you ever given advice by any of your managers about your, how could I put it, intimate life?
Not at all.
Really?
No, it was about
not even
eating.
Terry Venables.
No, it was eating. It was about drinking, but never about that.
I'd love to see a conversation between you and Sir Alex Ferguson in 1993 about your love life. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall. That's the documentary I want to see.
Listen, Paul, come here. I got to talk to you about something.
You look really tired after games, Paul. Why are you so tired all the time? What's going on? Why are you so tired?
At the risk of making this appendix last longer than the actual podcast. You know how when you bump into one of your old school teachers, you're kind of, even though you're the adult now, you're kind of awed. When you meet Sir Alex Ferguson, or if you were to meet him now, what would your response be? He's already rubbing the sweat off his forehead.
You was with him quite recently, wasn't you?
I saw him for the first time, obviously after his illness. I saw him. I saw him just pre his illness, and I saw him at the LMA dinner. It's been a while. When I sat down, I sat down with him for about 6 minutes, and it was just like he has got an aura about him, and it was a case of waiting for him to speak, bring up a topic, and we talked about it because I weren't going to ask him anything.
What do you call him?
I call him Boss.
Do you?
And Boss or Gaffer, yeah.
Do you feel towards him, is he a father figure or a jail warder?
Without a doubt, father figure. There was no rules with him. There was no rules. It was just about respect and understanding what the club meant, and understanding you're an adult. Don't go and do anything silly.
Stay under the wife.
All right. Listen. Well, if any manager,
he loved us to like in a football match. He wanted you to improvise, so he would never have said to you to stay under the wife.
Okay. Sam Allardyce is one that I'm amazed hasn't given sexual advice to, at least not publicly, to his players, because he's normally at the forefront of sports science and advances, cryogenic suspension, all the rest of it. But there's a great piece in L'Équipe this week, the fantastic French football magazine, where Gael Givet, of course, a former employee of Sam Allardyce, said that he tried to fire up the Blackburn team that Gael was a member of, for a game against Manchester United in 2010 by showing them clips of two films, one Gladiator and two 300. This is Gale's quote. We were all like, mimics a soldier with sword. So they got themselves all ready for the big combat. After 30 minutes, it was 3-0 to Manchester United. But after 90, it was 7-1. So they did score, at least. So not all Sam's plans can work out for the very, very best, do they?
Trouble is, if you're watching Gladiator for motivation, the hero dies in the end, and Oliver Reed also dies, spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm.
So the main characters, the heroic figures, all get killed.
And in 300, the death toll at the end is 300.
Everybody dies.
Everybody
so
dies.
Summation, go there, play well, get smashed, die. Congratulations, everyone.
I am the God King.
I love 300. It's so mad,
there?
Isn't it?
That was a bit more
Perseus.
I am the Lord of Hellfire.
Yeah.
And I bring you Perseus.
The most. No, you're talking about Arthur Brown, The Crazy World of Arthur Brown's Fire. That's the most disappointing opening to any music ever made, isn't it?
I am the God of Hellfire, and I bring you
Yeah, of course, fire. You're the God of Hellfire. You can do better than that, surely.
I bring you tea cakes.
Lovely. Tunnocks caramel wafers.
Do you know, you turned me on to them. I saw you tweeting about Tunnocks caramel wafers at some point last year.
King of confectionery.
And I hadn't had one since I was a child, and they do sell them in my local supermarket. And I thought, I saw Danny mention these. I've got to get them. They are, quite frankly, a gift from the gods.
Yeah, the confectionery crack, aren't they?
They sell 6 million of those every year.
Yeah.
6 million.
And the bloke who invented them is still very much in charge of the company, old Tunnocks. He invented the tea cake and the caramel wafer because all its rivals are a bit drier. There's not enough sticky caramel in them.
Yeah.
But
the ratios are just right. The size is just right. And also, if you're looking for a treat after dinner, I'm not getting paid for this.
No.
If you're looking for a treat after dinner, a full chocolate bar, too much.
Yeah,
a biscuit, too small.
Yeah.
The Tunnocks caramel wafer, perfection.
Maybe Sam should have used that as a motivation.
he's got me and Rennie on side, for
I
sure.
I would run through walls for a Tunnocks caramel wafer.
Well, there you are. That says it all. That is a proper motivation.
But for Gladiator, nah.
No, but at the end of the day, they actually did it as it worked out because they capitulated as well, didn't they?
Yes.
Losing 7-1. So they actually went along with what Sam showed them.
Exactly.
Now, I think
they are Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Those are already two fantastic stories, how you should and shouldn't be having sex and the caramel wafer in its football sort of milieu. But I think you can top both of those.
I'm allegedly. So I think in a certain
way...
We're
not in a court of law.
All about togetherness within a club.
Right.
Yeah. You get everything right. You want everyone singing off the same hymn.
That's the Antonio Conte story again, isn't it?
So, but what you do is this time is that you have everyone around and you try and keep things easier for people to understand and remember.
Right.
So what you do is you have a manager called Steve.
Right.
And then what you do is you bring an assistant manager called Steve as well, Agnew. And then you have a first team coach called Steve Clements. And then you have a scout called Steve Nixon, and you have a goalkeeping coach called Steve as well, Harper, and that keeps it easy.
That does mean you only have to get one tattoo if you're a Newcastle fan.
This is Steve Bruce's Newcastle, and they have how many? Everyone in a management position or coaching position is called Steve.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
What?
So it's a bit like a Monty Python one, isn't it? So you can make a song.
Bruce.
Steve.
Great to see you, Bruce. How are you, Bruce? How are you, Steve? What have you got to do in Geordie? I'm not going to do that.
Steve.
I'm doing it.
It reminds me, sorry, and I haven't got all the details yet, and I'm too lazy to look them up. This has replaced the time, well, you know, you can time it. When Graham Taylor was England manager, the head of the FA was called Taylor. The head of the Football League was called Taylor. And following the tragedies at Hillsborough High School, etc., the big report into football safety was Lord Justice Taylor. Everybody running English football was called Taylor. But there's only four of them. Now we've got the multiplicity of Steves at Newcastle.
And not one single Taylor, judging by the videos, had ever been to a Taylor. So that's interesting, isn't it, as well?
One of the things I want to tell you about is a couple of interesting anniversaries. I'll start with the one, because I was on the ground for this. It's 10 years ago this weekend that this result happened, and it's not the most remarkable thing that happened. Spurs 9, and of course on the teleprinter, brackets N-I-N-E, Wigan Athletic 1. Their goal, by the way, was handball. That was a disgrace that was allowed
to
stand.
What was their goal? I can't recall their goal.
They got a ball. The ball bounced up onto a bloke's hand and he belted it into the net. The important thing about this game was not only that Spurs get 9 in a top-level game, but I've never... Taibbi we talked about earlier on, but he lasted a few games after his terrible mistake when he's bombed out. Wigan Athletic sacked their left-back the next day. Eric Edmund had played for Sweden. Indeed, he played for Tottenham Hotspur without much distinction prior to this. But if you remember the 9 goals, Jermaine Defoe, love Jermaine, dribbled past Eric about 4 times in the penalty area before doing that cross shot that he does, right foot across the goalkeeper into the far corner. And Wigan tore up his contract the next day. Now, that is proper judgment on a performance.
It's so funny you should mention Eric Edmund today, because last week I was doing a programme where his name came up, maybe 2 weeks ago now, was when Spurs played Liverpool. So when was that? 3 weeks ago, whenever.
Yeah.
He is one of the scorers of one of the greatest goals for Tottenham Hotspur at Anfield. Eric Edmund from 40 yards, left-hand side of midfield, drives right in the top corner back in 2005. Earlier than that, I think it was actually, now I remember it. Because I know this because Andy Reid of this programme was also playing that day. And we brought it up to Andy about that goal, and he was saying it was one of the greatest goals he'd ever seen.
I feel we need to get Eric Edmund in on this show.
We've
now
got to
as
do
well.
It.
Just to talk about those two events alone in his career.
38 yards out it was. 38 yards out, and he finds the top
goal. Was Roberto in goal?
And he'd have saved it, mate.
I will say as well on that point, Tottenham scoring at Anfield. I'm presuming that Tottenham didn't win that game, though, even though he scored that goal, because they don't do well at Anfield normally, Tottenham.
Well, good question. I don't know the answer to that.
No, they went a long time. They went from 1912, sinking of the Titanic, to into the 80s without winning at Anfield. Because I remember distinctly, in those days, there was a thing called CFAX. It was a very slow-moving, pixelated BBC service. And I was watching the game on CFAX, and it said for 80-odd minutes, it said Liverpool 0, Tottenham 0. I am definitely taking that result, because we used to lose 4, 5, 6, and indeed 7, famously, at Anfield. And suddenly, it clicked over, and it said Liverpool 0, Tottenham 1, Crooks. I think about 82nd minute. I watched it with bated breath for the next 10 minutes. Then it went yellow, which meant it was full-time result. And I remember a tear flowed down my big old space opera of a head. It was an amazing day. That was Tottenham's first win at Anfield since the Titanic sunk.
Wow.
They've done a bit better since.
It's a good job you remember putting that extra 50 pence in the back of the TV.
Steam-driven TVs. Yeah. Watford's badge.
Oh, I've got to mention this. We have to mention this. Now, this story has been going on for over a year. Watford's badge, for those that don't know it, is a picture of a big Hertfordshire deer on the front, big red deer. It's called a hart. And it doesn't make sense, because if you're an outsider, they're called the Hornets. They play in black and yellow. And so why is there a big
Come
red
on
deer on the front?
And all that, yeah.
It kind of doesn't make sense, because it's a deer, and yet it's the horns of the deer. It's so much going
on. It's a complicated triangle of images.
It's too much. And so they asked their fans to come up with some new designs. 4,000 designs were sent in to Watford Football Club, and they decided, wow, this is far too many. So then, what did they do? They picked out their favourite few and then went to a select group of fans to boil it down to the final two. This is already a year into the process. They then finally come up with two, which is the current badge, the Hertfordshire deer on the black and yellow background, red trim. The other one, I think, is really, really good. And it's similar to the Manchester Worker Bee that they're kind of really pushing.
Beautiful
about.
Thing.
It's a really cool thing. And it's a hornet on the front. They are the Hornets. The colours are the Hornets. Mm. It makes sense. You can still call them the horns and all that sort of stuff. It makes sense.
Yes.
And after putting it out to a public vote, which got 25,000 fans voting on it, after a year of consultation and 4,000 designs sent in, they've decided... to keep the current badge.
Well done, Watford fans, and well done, Watford.
Like Watford season, it's a total waste of time.
Now, look, we all know why they try and change these badges, because traditionally, the traditional badge wasn't copyright. So you have to get if you want to be able to sell all your merchandise without people being able to rip it off in Hong Kong or other places are available to do the ripping off, you had to change the badge. My favourite one of those, of course, was Arsenal, who went to day two had to change their badge after nearly 80 years of that canon. We're going to change the badge because of the copyright laws. Okay, what do we do? But no doubt, blokes with ponytails were brought in, whiteboards were written on, notepads were expended. They just turned the cannon through 180 degrees. It faces the other way now. That's all they did.
£1 million, please.
Yeah, thank you. Ka-ching. That'll be very, very nice. Thank you.
And all they did was bring in a mirror. Yeah. That's it. That's all they did.
That's what they did. Let's finish off then. But I know you've got some things to say about this, Paul, as well, some quotes. It is also the anniversary, 1996, of one of the most amazing stories in English football, a man called Ali Deer. Just to give you a brief outline, Southampton was struggling. I spoke to Graham Souness about this. He was manager at the time. They'd lost four strikers to injury, and a man phoned them up and said, "I am George Weah, you know, the World Footballer of the Year. My cousin's a really good footballer. You should sign him." And so Graham says, "We were so desperate, we did sign him." A man called Ali Deer came. He had one training session with Southampton, and he was on the bench for a game. They fell behind, playing, I think, one midfield player up front. We've got to bring a forward on. And they brought on Ali Deer. Within minutes, it became obvious that he was not a professional footballer. He was not a footballer at all. He was barely a human being, as far as I'm aware. Bless him. And he was taken back off. I mean, how much guts? I think it's 15 minutes he lasted on the pitch, and Graham resubstituted him. It's one of the great incidents in English football. It's the anniversary this weekend, and we like to celebrate things like that here on the Game Day Record Book podcast. There's some reaction to this in the newspapers as well, Paul.
There is. One of the papers is putting it in the autobiography of Matt Letizier. He just said... He said he ran around on a pitch like Bambi on ice. If I had no idea if he was George Weah's cousin or not, but I think he was very surprised. I was very surprised to look at him and see him coming on. One of the worst things about, he comes on and he has a calf strain after 32 minutes. Ken Moncal comes on in the 53rd minute.
Yeah, it was a disaster. Yeah.
And then he turns up to the training ground next day to have treatment. No one sees him after that.
No.
He's gone.
That's fantastic bare frontery. I'd love that to happen. I'd love to be the guy who gets a minute for West Ham. Convinced him I was Julian Dix's nephew, and no one put a call in. Like, no one checked this out. No one got his passport. Was he good in training? You know how bad players are always good in training? Yeah. Was he amazing in training?
Paul doesn't realise that those of us who didn't get to play professional football, we all have worked out these incredibly elaborate scenarios whereby we end up pulling on the claret or white shirt or red or blue or striped shirt just one time. Obviously, it involves me winning the lottery. Hasn't somebody just won the lottery and bought a Scottish club?
Partick Thistle, yes. Yeah. He's bought it and he's given it back to the fans.
What a man. Yeah.
So he won 129 million-ish on the Euro Millions.
He hasn't spent 120 million on Partick Thistle.
He spent £1 on Partick Thistle and it was still overpriced. But he is going to give it back to supporters of Partick Thistle. It's an incredible story. One final thing on players running on. Do you remember the film Goal? Do you remember this? It was a big thing in like 2003, 2004, and it was the fake story of a Mexican player who went to Newcastle United. To get a scene film for this, and you can find this video on YouTube, it's brilliant, the two main actors, so the guy who was playing up front, who was also in the film Con Air, the brother of Cyrus the Virus in that movie, I believe, he was also in Goal, as well as the main actor, I can't remember his name, the Mexican guy. The whistle goes at St James's Park between Newcastle and Liverpool. They've got to get the scenes. So what do? They're hiding behind the advertising hoarding at the full-time whistle. At the whistle, they both run onto the field, and this has been totally accepted by everyone at Newcastle, it's going to happen, but they didn't tell Liverpool it was going to happen.
So
they come on the field, and they're shaking hands with Steven Gerrard. They're patting each other on the back. They're going, oh, what a tough game. They've got sweat dripping down, and everyone's going, who are these guys?
Yeah,
who are these people that just run on? Security, someone get on. It's the most brilliant video, and Steven Gerrard, to me, looks like he's about to hit him.
All footballers are afraid of the people who run on the pitch, except Mark Noble. Yeah. Because he is so used to it as the shop steward for the West Ham fans. How many times in the past, 7 or 8 years has someone run on, and but they don't go and run up to other West Ham players. It's always Mark who is the postman for their complaints.
There's at least three I can think of.
Yeah.
And he's also done it where opposition players. Do you remember the last game at the bowling ground where Ander Herrera went down injured, and Mark Noble, while he was injured, literally picked him up and ran him off the field and put him down, and then they played on. He's fantastic. He's going to be a great steward when he finishes.
Yeah, but the thing about it, though, Mark Noble is the most... He lives local to me, and he's so placid. A nice man. Goes into a place I go, and he sits down quietly in a corner and has a Coke. He just sits down. Obviously, I don't know what else is in the Coke.
No.
But
he might need something stronger after
recent
performances.
Does he recognise you?
I take pictures with me, and I give him one of them.
Yeah,
that's me.
See this?
It's got all my stats.
See the 1990 World Cup? There's me there. You see me there? That's me.
It's like passing your screenplay around Musso and Franks. That's what it is for you, isn't it?
Listen, Paul and Tom, I want to thank you for making this the longest appendix that we've ever attempted on the Game Day Record
Book
podcast. No, but they're going to get longer and longer because they're
great
stuff.
Need two appendices is what we need.
Absolutely. And Tom, fantastic input. Paul, as always, a pleasure to be with you
and
to work with you. And thank you all of you for listening to this. As I say, we love the fact you are listening. If you know anybody you think might like this kind of material, or if you know anybody, somebody who you don't like very much, tell them to download this as well. I'm Danny Kelly. It's been a joy talking to you. God bless you all.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions, we share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.